Hey everyone, it is July 23rd, and this is Rigger J's Geeky Kinky Techie audio blog. With this wonderful quarantine, I've been thinking about various things about rope, and something that comes to mind is the idea of epochs in our modern era of rope in North America. An epoch, it's an event or time marked by an event that begins a new period of development, a memorable event or date, an extended period of time categorized by a distinctive development or a memorable series of events. So this has made me think about like defining moments and the day the universe changed, or at least day the universe changed. And I'm probably going to have some of these dates wrong, and it's been a long time, and my brain is rusty, and I hope some of the things I list out don't offend anyone, and I'm happy to correct them. There is a FetLife writing that I am basically repeating here, so please go to FetLife, Rigger J, and you'll see it there. It's definitely also not a definitive listing, and like all history, it is muchly tainted by my own personal lenses. So I'm going to go back to pre-2000. The Adult Rope Art Yahoo group, long before FetLife, many people from all over the world contributed to this list, some very big names out of Japan. And it's where many of the people who then later influenced North American rope first met and discussed things that would be shaped later on. Names like Lokai, Lookout, Grey Dancer, Jimmy Tattoo, and the list just goes on. Many of these people aren't even teaching anymore or very rarely teach. Coming a little bit further along to the next kind of epoch that I can think of is availability of books, taking it off of the fringes of the internet. And this is around 2002. We have Midori's book, the Two Naughty Boys book, Chantre Rose, Lee Harrington's book. They became a source of education and starting points for a lot of people at the beginning of 2000. Oh my God, 20 years ago. And a lot of it is sort of dated. It's distilled through multiple layers of Japanese rope bondage, depending on which book it is. So it's almost Western at times. But they're still really good sources of information. Lots of it are recipes and patterns. And there is still a lot of skills that people can gain from those books. And then ShibariCon came along. I think that was around 2005. It's probably the first dedicated major rope event. I think they often had about 200 to 300 people show up for this. It was Memorial Day weekend in Chicago. And what would often happen is a lot of people would take what they learned at ShibariCon and bring it out to their local communities and continuing on spreading knowledge. A lot of the people from the original adult rope art group would be then the instructors at ShibariCon. It was a fantastic event. Was my where I got my start, and yeah, it was wonderful. FetLife is also just, it's not just an epoch in the kink world, or not rope world, it's the whole kink world. We got away from awkward mailing lists and cheesy things like Adult Friend Finder or Kink Friend Finder and stuff like that to the more formalized forum base. And this is really when accessibility to kink became much more prevalent. And while a lot of people, you know, rightfully call it a dumpster fire today, it's still very much a fundamental source of knowledge and community. It's worth it. Coming out of ShibariCon and smaller events as they started getting more and more rope, was Grey Dancer's Rope-tastic Unconference Extravaganza, The Grew. And I think that was 2006, 2007. It was a fantastic format. It's basically an open format. You put up on a wall, what do you want to learn? What do you want to teach? And then everyone finds corners and talks about it. I went to the second or third out of Connecticut, And that was my own inspiration in a long time ago to found the Boston Rope Group, which before we lost our space, was like 100 people attending on a regular basis. It was pretty amazing. And that leads into, from there, a lot of rope groups started spawning all over the place. Out of Boston Rope Group, three or four rope groups formed in the Boston area. And just all over the country, people were starting to do more and more clusters of, instead of just tight friend circles, come one, come all, skill shares, and rope knowledge in mini classes. And that's all around 2007 or so. Then came the Somerville Bowline. So this was topologist and also known as crash restraint. He cooked up this tie, and it turns out it was a more of a rediscovery. It was a knot that was already around, but it made for a very good single column tie. And between him and a little later, Bastard Ropes, the scientific aspects of rope started kicking in more. Looking at breaking strengths of rope. Looking at things like, oh, we've always been tying this one column tie this way, but if you tie it just slightly wrong, it becomes collapsing and stuff like that. And also from that came the craze of wanting to be a person who comes up with a tie or a knot of some sort and gets a name. Really, the only one that I could think of that's really stuck around is the Somerville Bowline. Later, as rope events became more and more prevalent. And again, this is all kind of coming to a head around 2008, 2009. Rope performances became like a thing, from it happened once at an event to the whole event's evening was just rope performances. And that fed into an event called Morpheus's Bondage Extravaganza, which was then a whole public spectacle of rope bondage. And a lot of discussion started happening around the preferences of performance rope versus purely a sexual fetish rope. At that point, now, much of this was, we're 2009 area now, a lot of this was heavily, heavily male-led, male-organized, and top-centric. Constantly, there'd be, well, what about the bottoms? And you can't do rope without a bottom. But on top of that came a push around. Women identified riggers and rope tops, and hitch and bitches came into existence, which was skill shares and rope groups that were dedicated to women identified led gatherings, and they still continue today. It's great to see this still going. Then we hit 2010, and a moment changes. Up until 2010, almost everybody that learned rope was from somebody who got books and reverse engineered, or found someone who had done this, or someone who's gone to Japan. But now the Japanese instructors are coming into the United States. They're seeing that there is a business for them here. And the major rope events around started bringing in the dedicated these instructors, and we got closer to the source, closer to the authentic style, and a lot of the rope changed in its look and appearance, closer to the same look and feel as what was going on in Japan at the time. Then, unfortunately, starting at 2012 and 13, we have the fall of Shibari-Kan. It had a very good run, but unfortunately, our society puts skill on a pedestal, and we presume that skill makes somebody a good person. And we've had a bunch of issues of massively wrong behavior come to light, and events handled it very poorly for a lot of reasons. Shibari-Kan was one of these, and they had a huge explosion of no, you can't do this, you cannot support people who have done this behavior. And it struggled for a year or two, and then Shibari Kan was gone. And that Me Too type movement years before the Harvey Weinstein stuff, it still goes forward today. And happily, we are more comfortable, not always, unfortunately, bringing out to light people who have crappy, really negative behavior. And I think that was an epoch moment that publicity from that really helped open up the willingness for others to speak up. With the fall of Shibari Kan, you found a massive increase in intensives. So instead, and that was around 2013 and on, although there was happening before this, but it really started taking up then. The Japanese instructors would come out, or a high-end North American rigger would do 2 to 3 day intensives. So rather than just being a series of classes at a kink event, now the whole thing is about learning one person's style. And this also typically was a income generator for the instructor, and usually at a high premium pricing, which had a tendency of pricing out the average person. And they started to come down and spread out again as the knowledge from the Japanese riggers showed up in the United States. More people knew what they were able to emulate that style and learn from that style, take these intensive, and then go teach it themselves. There's a whole conversation about teaching other people's works and stuff, but I'm not focusing on that. It's just the intensives really tried it. 2013, it kicked off. And it took away from actually a lot of dedicated rope events. They still happen, but I think people were more into the intensives at times. And now we come to probably a year, 2 years ago now. Shibari study by Gorgon. Gorgon is a fantastic model, instructor, presenter, all of these things. And they were the bottom for a lot of the Japanese riggers that came across. And now they have an amazing site, Shibari Study. And when you're on Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, you see the photos that are coming through are people who are doing fantastic photography. But you can see that the ties and the rope they're doing all came out of Shibari Study. And I think that was another epoch movement. And it's kind of the existence of Shibari Study and that prevalence of those photos that have really made me think about this story. So each of these things that I've mentioned have kind of set a course. There's other things, there's other important ones. Someone brought up Friction Live has, in the t just before COVID broke, bringing the Zoom online classes as a concept, proving it, and then COVID put it over the top. So now, COVID's kind of an epoch, but it's so current. I think we haven't really seen how things have fallen out of it yet. So anyway, I know that there are other moments. I know there are things that people would disagree. Please go check out the writing I have in FetLife and feel free to add your comments there. And thank you very much and have a great day.